From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live with my BFF Keon. Keon, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, sir. How was your week?
It was busy. Yeah, like I was telling you before the show, it's been crazy busy this week for me. Long hours. You can usually tell I looked really tired. What about you?
Yeah. It's been nice. I'm visiting family in California and seeing a lot of people I haven't seen in a long time. Like kids I knew. People that used to be kids that are no longer kids. I saw quite a few of them. It's really
what do you mean
cool
they're no longer kids?
They're like not kids anymore. They're like adults.
Okay. You mean they just grew up or something?
Yeah, they grew up. And, you know, your memory of them does not account for what happens, you know, around puberty and after. And so you see them, you know, 5 years after puberty and you're like, whoa, they don't even look like the same person.
Yeah, it's always weird, right? Because they act weird when they see you. And then you see them and you're just like, I'm not being weird. You're being weird.
I'm always weird. But in this case, I think, I think I was probably mostly weird. They're like, hey, long time no see. And I'm like, I don't even, like,
recognize
who
you.
Are you? I really didn't. One of the brothers I saw, I recognized him. And the other one I couldn't recognize. I was like, dude, you look totally different than I remember you. And I think
because
they had these like big glasses. Anyway, they turned into like the hunks, you know, like you can imagine them being like TikTok famous.
Oh, are they furries or no? Yeah. Are they furries? Do they talk about stuff like
what
that?
What are furries?
Dude, I told you
that.
Like
I think it's old fashioned now.
Oh, that's old. That's
last gen.
Oh, that's last gen.
Yeah, last gen. Okay. Last gen young people. I think these current generation of young people are more about like probably like video, short video culture stuff.
Oh, that's
probably.
Cool.
Yeah. That's what I think.
Dude,
that's
I always feel so old when I hang out with my nieces and nephew. Like I just feel so old, dude. But I learned all these cool new words though. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. I don't know. It's really neat. And just seeing people. I scuffed my uncle-in-law's rims on one of his cars yesterday. When I borrowed it to go to the store, and I have so many feelings about it. I feel so bad about it.
Were you like switching the hydraulics or something? What was going on?
No, I was driving it, and I like scraped it on a curb.
Oh crap!
The wheel was, yeah. I feel so bad about it because it's like I can't really, you know, you can't undo something like that, and he like really, he's like, you know, he's kind of, it's like most people have. Who care about their cars a lot, and it's like a big deal. Anyway, that's what's going on with me. That's the week I'm at.
That's crazy. That's weird to hear you have like regular, normal, issues, like family issues. That's funny.
Yeah.
Before it would be like, yeah, I missed my Waymo this morning. Can't believe it dropped me off in front of this structure. Now it's like I scuffed my uncle's rim. It's funny.
Yeah, I normally don't have normal things going on. That's a bit interesting too. It's nice to have normal things going on.
That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, if you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. We cover the front page of Bitcoin until Keon comes with a better tagline. I should say definitely hit that subscribe button. Look, you can go to the YouTube. We're on Spotify. We're everywhere. The most viewed video last week was my rant on David Bailey. And dude, it was crazy because it released on Monday. Wumbo released it on Monday, and then it like shot up. And everybody, we got like new subscribers. People were commenting on it. not a lot of views, but for this little small channel, there was some guy that like got really upset about it. But I thought that was funny. Yeah, I think I know. There was a guy that said that, like, this is why you're gonna, your YouTube channel is never gonna grow, and you deserve no Bitcoin because corporations, and I forget what he said, but yeah. Anyways, this is why we SNL every week. But yeah, if you like what we do, hit that subscribe button. We're gonna jump into the top five stories this week. The number five top story this week is I deleted my home internet. It's from KR, June 23rd, Tech Territory. 17 comments, 5,413 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, KR. If folks don't know KR, he likes things to be. He likes to experiment quite a bit, and most of the experimenting is an attempt to take things in a direction, in directions that totally simplify. That's kind of how I describe KR, and I've known KR for basically as long as a Stacker News has existed, and that's kind of his vibe. And so it's cool seeing he's been doing more of the stuff in the realm of like his like lifestyle, and he's been writing about it on Stacker News. And in this case, he deleted his home internet, and he's only using his. I think it's cell phone is what he's doing. And he does, he says he does this periodically with a variety of services. And just the latest one is his internet, but he said he's deleted bank accounts and credit cards and phone numbers. It's also a stoicism exercise that if anyone's familiar with stoicism, they might have read about more frequently. The example is that you take a week and you like only live on rice and beans. And you see how that is, and you realize that it's not that bad, and that you can take it or leave it, and therefore you have like less, like loss aversion around luxury more generally. And so I don't know if KR is channeling the Stoic philosophers, but this reminds me a lot like that. I mean, he says he's on his Canadian phone plan, which is only $20 a month. And he gets 1 gigabyte a month of internet. And so he says he only really uses it for emergencies and really can't do anything that intensive on his phone. And he just writes about that experience. One of the more fun things that he discovered while doing this is how many like habits and patterns he has that are not even conscious. He says he'll regularly like open his laptop and attempt to get his internet working, like kind of forgetting that he had chosen to shut it off, just because like I'll do that often with websites where I'll just like mindlessly type in certain websites in the URL bar and go visit them without even thinking, just when I have a moment where I'm distracted or something. And it sounds like he has that experience with the, using the internet generally, which is pretty, pretty cool. Anyway, that's,
have you ever done that? Have you ever gone to, I know you told me before you like in the early days of like after college and stuff, you've gone pretty hardcore, but have you ever done this here recently? I know for you, you're pretty frugal.
I don't think I've done something like this, where I got rid of my internet. I always had internet even when I was in college. It wouldn't even have occurred to me to get rid of internet. I think it might be interesting to live off of, mobile, like hotspot internet, and see how much I don't need another internet subscription through my fiber provider. That might be interesting. I've always had cell service for the most part. I don't think I ever got rid of stuff like that. Those I always took as like essentials, like food and like some kind of shelter.
Yeah.
So I don't think I've ever thought to get rid of them, but it's pretty cool to think about it. Because I bet you'd be okay. I bet, you know, you don't need, if you're not like doing like online gaming or
right.
you know, watching a lot of streaming video.
Right.
You know, text-based services are pretty low bandwidth, so.
Totally.
Yeah.
Looks like we have It's Real Fake had the top comedy set inspiring. Thanks. Might be able to integrate this kind of experiment into my ProNect. I will give it some thought at least. Good luck and keep us posted. Scourge said, there was a time when I read a lot of news. My kids were really little at this point, so I may have been just trying to entertain myself while dealing with babies. But it certainly wasn't a good use of my time. Then I heard this line by Tlaib that you shouldn't bother reading the news because if it's important, you'll hear about it. And otherwise, it's a waste of time. I agree with that for sure. Absolutely. Great Ruby said, I find Bell 5 internet to be pretty good. Had a lot of problems with Rogers when we lived in the city. Simple Stacker said, yo, that's crazy, but kudos to you. Do you think you're going to stick with it? Kara said, yeah, I'll try a couple of months and see the effect it's having on my life. I'm cautiously optimistic that this might actually be sustainable. Yeah, I feel like, because KR gets out a lot. Like, he works out a lot, so you would think it would be good for him because he likes being in nature. So, that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, big runner, big hiker.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah, he'd be like the perfect guy for this. I remember when I went on my retreats, they took all our phones and everything. So we didn't have internet for like 3 days or 4 days. I forget how many days it was. I remember I told you, dude, like it was shocking. Like to come back to society and like see like everybody on their phones. Well, first, to see all the messages first was shocking. And then to see everybody, like, because I went straight to the airport. I remember going straight to the airport after that and then seeing everybody on their phones. And, like, I remember, like, visually seeing people on their phones. And then I just came from a spiritual retreat. So it was a different, like, kind of, like, mental switch. That was weird. It was, like, it was weird. I don't know how to describe it. I would definitely recommend that. That'll like mess with your, it'll, I don't know how to explain it. It does something to your mind a little bit. I don't know how to explain it, but I agree. That's the kind of shock I think you're, cause at that point you're like, you're not checking anything. And the only thing you can do is talk to the people around you. And guess what happens? You literally just talk and the world, like nothing happens. Like you just don't hear about the news. You don't hear about anything. And you just like talk and you find out, like, you just sit in like with yourself. You sit in with all your troubles. you sort out your problems, turns out.
Yeah. And you do the kind of the thing our genes spent a lot of time doing, which is just hanging out with other people and talking to them.
Yeah, and then you sort out your problems with other people. People that you trust, right? Like that's why you have the river rule and all that stuff, and then that's cool.
Yeah.
But if we had our phones, you wouldn't be able to reflect later on that night when you go to bed. And the first thing you would check is your phone, and then it would throw everything off. So that's why removing the phones is so important.
So yeah. It's a huge distraction.
Yeah. Anyways, good on KR for sharing that with us. Let me see. Let's go back here. We're going to go to the number 4 top story. Essay, visible and felt impacts of Bitcoin culture. This is from Unschooled Bitcoin territory. This was only 4 hours ago, huh? 15 comments, 3,869 cents. Wow, this made the top five right away?
Yeah, I guess so. Wow. I was surprised by that too, because I was reading the top. I read the top five this morning, and then or like reread a lot of it, and then I think there was another one in the top four spot. I think KR's might have been there, and
so this might have had
And then
go ahead. I'm sorry.
And then I went back. Then I went back at, like a couple hours before we were going to record this, and I saw this in the top four, so that I made sure to read this.
So this might have had some heavy top-tier snackers zapping this, huh?
Yeah, I think a lot of snackers resonated with this in all likelihood. It looks like, 10 zappers on this bad boy.
I got 11. I clocked 11 on this one.
Oh, maybe I loaded mine earlier. Okay.
So what do you, what is this about?
Yeah, I think I've been struggling, trying for a few minutes, knowing that we're going to talk about this, how to maybe sum it up as succinctly as possible. But I think Unschooled's main point is that Bitcoiners are spending a lot of time on things that they shouldn't be. There's like a lot of, as far as like our culture building and kind of the messages that we're sending each other, and like anyone who's listening to Bitcoiners, it's all kind of high time preference stuff. And likely being high time preference stuff will not age well, and it will not survive the test of time, because it's not, it usually has the quality of like not being very true, and you know, certainly not being true for very long, and sort, you know, has subtle misleading aspects to it and things like that. And instead we should focus on the low time preference stuff, you know, things like Bitcoin security, Bitcoin's privacy, its its properties that make it decentralized, it's censorship resistant, these kind of things that we know have to be there in the future if Bitcoin is going to succeed, and therefore are, you know, timeless things to work, to think about and refine. And in addition to that, Unschooled ties it into like family values, because that is something that we often see coincide with a lot of Bitcoin stuff, is in trying to think about the future more, is a lot of talk about family and how to do family the right way and why people should start families and things like that. And then I think after that introduction, it kind of goes through three like aspects to Bitcoin's culture and describes what they think is visible in Bitcoin's culture on that dimension. Like one of them is art. The easiest one I think to understand is maybe artistic contributions. Like what does Bitcoin show about Bitcoin? Or what does Bitcoin art show about Bitcoin? And then like how, like what is it, how does it feel? And kind of what is visible is more like the short-term impact, and what is felt is what is, I think, what Unschooled is associated with the long-term impact. In the case of Bitcoin art, he said it's kind of, you know, it seems at first kind of shallow. You know, Bitcoin is freedom. Satoshi is, you know, a godlike figure. And it might be, you know, kind of boring. But then it says on a deeper level, it shows how appreciative Bitcoiners are of Bitcoin itself, and that, you know, that is maybe a mission worth serving. But anyway, it's kind of, it's a fairly nuanced thing, kind of deep, and has quite a bit of dimensionality to it. But I think does a great job of exploring what it intends to.
Yeah. So how does he end, though? So just in closing, I truly believe that culture in general is deficit nowadays, because most of the informational artifacts we consume are extremely fleeting and temporary. It's not that only rich and powerful are capable of generating a lasting impression. So yeah, how does he end here? Like, what is he saying? Like, what is he trying to say?
It started out a lot how it's, my memory is, at least, it ended a lot how it started, in the sense that we shouldn't be paying attention to the short-term news cycle. We should be paying attention to the long-term fact cycle. And like the long-term value cycle rather than the short-term popularity cycle. So just kind of went back to more of that kind of frame where it's important where we put our attention. And it seems like more than ever before, Bitcoiners are quite distracted with like short-term phenomena going on in Bitcoin.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I have so much to say here, but I guess I'll just, you know, for the stackers that are listening to this, because those are the people that I care about. That's why I do this show. Like, I think this is an amazing article, and I can't wait to go back and read this later. I mean, this is the type of stuff that I love about Stacker News. Mm-hmm. It's like these thoughtful, well articulated, deep dives into how I definitely see the culture in Bitcoin. Because there is this kind of short term thinking that's going on right now. Like, you have Saylor, you have Jack Maulers. They're all, you know, they're running corporations that are monetizing Bitcoin and, you know, through securities. And that's a whole thing right now that's getting a lot of attention. And, you know, there's going to be Main Street that's going to be investing in these securities and paying, like, I don't know how much over the price of a normal Bitcoin. And it's also, they can just dump on retail. That's a thing, right? So that's going on. That's getting a lot of attention. And not only is it getting attention, they're getting praised for it, right? So that's a whole thing. And then on the other side of that, you have, like, we'll talk about it later in the show because it's in the top stories. So you have new people that are coming into Bitcoin who are newly rich, and they're getting a lot of attention. And then we have these maximalists that, you know, were the ones that told us, like, be low time preference, stay humble, stack sats, these type of people. And they're doing the complete opposite now. And a lot of us are like John Travolta in that little gif, right? They're like, wait a second, what's going on? And yeah. I think to the snackers that are listening and watching this, you know, this is why last week Carr went on a rant, right? It's time to slay these guys. And it's not done in a malicious way or in a bad way. It just means that this is the time where this new legion, this new group has to step in and become those voices. It's time for us to carry that flag forward until we get slayed, because we will. Me and Keon will eventually, you know, we'll fall that way at some point. I hope not, you know, but, you know, snackers will have to call us out at some point. Hopefully we won't. I don't think I will, but I never thought these people would either. Like, you had to tell me Jack Maulers is going to, you know, because it's one thing, like, I'll just say this, it's just to clear up some information, but, like, it's one thing to start a company like Strike, right? And it's one thing to, like, actually, you know, get in a situation where you're like, you have due diligence you have to do, there's KYC, there's all this stuff that you have to do because you're running a company and there's certain trade-offs you have to make, Keon, right? And then before you know it, you're like, you have to follow these rules, and it's like, dang, I have to do this, and then there's investors and all this stuff, right? So totally understand that. I totally get that from, like, a founder's perspective. Your kind of hands are tied, right? Like, as a founder, you kind of have stakeholders. You kind of have to follow these rules. So, like, I'm never going to fault Jack for that. Like, if anything, like, he just did what was best for his company. He's always going to get a pass from me for that. But on the other hand, when you start a new company with the sole purpose of just buying Bitcoin to dump on Main Street, to dump on people, like, that's a little bit different. Like, that's kind of, you know, like, that's a choice there. And that's what I'm saying to the stackers at home. Like, this is not normal behavior that you would see coming from these people who in the past would call this out for us. Right. And that's all I'm saying. It's like, it's a weird time. And I think what we're seeing here is this very short term, this very high time preference fiat kind of thinking. And we need to get back to low time preference type of mindset. And I mean, that's what I do here at Plub Lab. It's like, you can't have, like, this kind of fiat mindset. I mean, this is why this is why we are in the situation we are in America. Like, I don't know. It's also unimportant and a distraction sometimes. And for me, I just don't pay attention to it anymore, but it's in our face all the time. And I see it on Stacker News because it gets voted and everybody wants to talk about it, this financial engineering that's going on. And it's almost at a point where it's like, it's kind of a joke at this point. Because it's the charade and the joke of it all is so visible and it's so outlandish, and these people are going on stage at all these conferences and they're getting cheered and it's clearly a complete scam, and us behind the scenes, the ones who are doing all the heavy lifting and the building and the behind the scenes work, are just kind of like there's nothing else to do but just ignore, keep building, and build for this more vibrant, beautiful future that we know that we're building towards. And that's all you can do is just keep doing the right thing, and irregardless of how these other people are taking advantage of the system, irregardless of what they're doing, that's what I believe. Doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter, Keon.
I think it certainly doesn't matter if you're, building what you want to build and all that stuff. I definitely agree with that. And I think that's, what you should pay attention to. I think a lot of this stuff, I think, if you have the right mindset or whatever, you can filter out a lot of this stuff and do yourself a great service. By doing that, and maybe maybe you don't have to shut off your internet like KR, but you can simply just like sort of ignore it to some degree. I sort of like watching it. I like to see like kind of what people are thinking and how they're thinking about it, and you can I think Saylor's been pretty honest about it. He's just like I'm really good at this financial engineering stuff, and this is like the best financial engineering play of all time. And like, I'm never going to be able to beat anyone at building anything, but I can beat people at understanding like the arrow of technology through time, and beating them there and building financial instruments around it. And that's kind of what he's done. And so he's honest about it. And so it's interesting to hear.
Let me just say one thing. Somebody like Saylor doesn't bother me, actually, to be honest, like just to be clear. It's the people like Maulers who are like, who was that guy that a lot of us really respected, right? Because he had a choice. Right? It was like, he was a founder that a lot of people looked up to. Saylor was already in that situation. Like, he invented the wheel for it, right? And we saw the interview with Jordan Peterson that we talked about a few weeks ago, where he was like, he felt like he was the short end of the stick with Elon, who he thought were his like contemporaries, right? And it's funny because like with Maulers, though, it's different because Maulers was already doing Strike. And at least to us, he looked very much successful. Maybe it was a different story behind the scenes. I don't know. But that's completely different because it's like I'm going to keep doing Strike. It's already going. I'm going to go and do this and use that. It's just kind of like, really, really, dude? Like, it's... Yeah, it's just different, man. And he doesn't owe anybody anything. He can do that. It's just the climate that we're in. And for me, it's just like, man, that sucks. Cause that was one that I really loved having in our kind of like in our group. But it's okay. We gotta make another one like that at some point. So maybe it's Francisco. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. There's like a, there's almost like a, you feel like a loss of sort of a central figure in kind of Bitcoin's culture. And I, you know, I don't, I wonder how much that's even true. I mean, I know like whether Jack was central to Bitcoin culture. I think he does a very great job of playing sort of a rock star role. And I think he did that really well. And, you know, was that, you know, he was like the capstone at all of the conferences for a while. And, you know, but his company is a lot of what Bitcoiners claim to not want to see, which is like this KYC custodial product. And so and while it's like, you know, we assume it's an essential part of Bitcoin's future to have such things because we need on-ramps and off-ramps. And, you know, who better than one of our own to build it? You know, maybe,
but who
maybe
actually,
it's less about...
But honestly, yeah. though, Keon, like, who actually uses Strike, though? Like, I don't use Strike. Like, do you use Strike?
I have a Strike account. I actually like their redesign.
Oh, you do? Okay, so, I don't know anybody that uses Strike, though, to be honest. Everybody uses Cash.
Well, anyone who has a Primal, anyone who has a wallet through Primal is using Strike.
Yeah.
But
that's what I'm trying to say, like... Yeah, I don't know. I'm not trying to throw shade at Strike. I'm just saying, like, it's just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, he was our guy. Like, he was our guy. And it just feels like we lost our guy. Yeah,
well,
our guy.
We probably don't want to talk about this too long, but one of the things that I was surprised by at the 2025 conference, and although I didn't see it in person, it wasn't Mallers. Who was the capstone speaker? Sailor.
Oh, yeah.
It was Sailor. I believe it was Sailor, or it was Ross. But regardless, it was Sailor came after Mahlers, and so that just kind of shows that, you know, I think if Mahlers wants to stay the rock star, and not get replaced like Backstreet Boys were replaced by NSYNC. That's the extent of my music metaphors. But like, you know, like doesn't want to get one upped by the next rock star.
Yeah.
He's going to start playing the same game and competing on that dimension.
Yeah. I guess this is his own, he has to keep. Yeah. Yeah. I guess you're right.
Yeah,
I guess he had to leave that kind of, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess he's only, yeah, working him way up. Yeah, I guess it's good for him. We need to find a new Mahlers.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's you. Maybe it's you getting off your skateboard. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's you getting off your uncle's vehicle.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. but, you know, viewed from that perspective, I think that's most of what's going on, and you know, I don't know what to make of it, but it's like, like electronic music was invented. And if he wants to stay relevant, he has to start playing electronic music. We know him as like a great acoustic guitarist or whatever. So I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. I think, I'm glad we had this talk because it does feel like this is a very timely post. Very timely post.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, an unschooled would say Jack Mahlers is making a mistake because he's paying more attention to fashion and trends and like, you know, the Bitcoin music scene.
Right.
Than he is in like, you know, the music that he cares about and the music that will last forever.
Exactly.
And yeah. And so that's kind of unschooled's point. I forgot to mention, and because I made a note to myself to mention it, but unschooled has a bullet point in here about in-person meetups, community. And that's what they give as an example of perhaps like the most enduring, important thing that Bitcoiners can work on. And I know that would resonate a lot with you because I heard you say a lot of similar things, but that's one thing I wanted to.
You know what, you know what they throw back at us though? They call us purists or they call us like these other words like hipster coiners or whatever. And to me, that's like the most BS thing ever because, you know, like I wouldn't call Jimmy Song a purist or a hipster coiner. I would just call him just a freaking Bitcoiner who stayed true to his ethos, right? Like, what's, you know, he doesn't do these things.
Yeah, but I also don't, I think, I would guess that Jimmy does not. I don't think Jimmy has really weighed in on the treasury company trend. I think he sees it as sort of inevitable, and he doesn't see it. I don't think he has sort of a moral point of view on it. I don't think he sees it as gross. He kind of just sees it as sort of inevitable. The incentive's playing out. This has to happen.
He also doesn't have a weekly news show.
It's true, but I pay quite a bit of attention to the stuff Jimmy puts out, and I haven't seen
him say. It's because he's smart.
He's not fighting this treasury stuff. I think his point. He's probably like ambivalent about it. He's like, it's going to happen. He's like, I think, you know, it's a fiat game. I don't like it. Is what I guess he'd say. But it's like better than, you know, better that these companies are buying Bitcoin on for their treasuries than, you know, some little Solana or something. That's going to be even worse when it implodes.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I like following this stuff week to week and being wrong or like seeing how it develops over time and being like, oh, I learned, you know, in front of everybody. I was right about eCash though.
So, were you? I don't know. I think it's still early.
I was totally right about eCash. Are you kidding me? I was the only one right about eCash.
I mean, I know other people have caught up to you on the point of view that eCash is, you know, effectively be a CBDC. We haven't seen eCash turn into CBDCs yet.
The stablecoin bill is going to help eCash all the way now, right? Isn't that going to help with that?
I mean, we do see people pairing. I was surprised to see how fast people started pairing stablecoins, like Taproot assets, and like stablecoins as Taproot assets with eCash system.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. I think if the bill passes, I don't know if Trump's going to sign it or not. Dude, I'm all for eCash at that point. I told you that was the only thing that I was on, like, kind of like, it was just like, as if they pass a bill with eCash, then I'm on board with it. I just not going to be on board with something unless they're going to pass a bill. We're halfway to a CBDC. Yeah. We're almost there, guys. Let's keep it going.
I think there's also, you know, there's that dimensionality of eCash. There's also the Bitcoin dimension of eCash, where you have, you know, just, you know, wallet of Satoshi like custodial banks for small amounts of Bitcoin that are a little more anonymous and have slightly different authentication mechanisms that allow them to be used in different contexts. And I think that you know, so eCash isn't fully the whole your kind of vision for it, or not your vision, but your predictions of it.
I think the last thing that we need, this is where like I was talking with Nick, is like the last thing we need to hold the line now is holding our keys, because they're going to come for that eventually next. That's the next thing I think they're going to come for, is they're not going to let us hold our own keys. That's what they're coming
for. Yeah, I mean, next. Not anytime soon. During this administration.
Yeah, definitely next administration for sure. Next administration they come for our keys.
Well, I wouldn't call the count. But I would say, yeah. I mean, certainly if we're talking about globally, we see that already happening. I believe in the UK and the EU, they have this travel rule thing.
This will be the last time you'll be able to buy Bitcoin through an exchange this cycle, or this presidency. And then by the end of this presidency, you won't be able to buy Bitcoin on an exchange that you'll be able to hold. And then by the end of that, they'll come, and then when AOC becomes president, because that's how crazy our America is right now, then you'll be able, then they'll come for our keys. But hopefully by then, Keon will be long gone.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be AOC. I think it'll be
Biden.
I think it'll be another, it'll be like a, it'll be probably like a young Bernie.
He's only getting older.
Yeah, but like someone who has Bernie, who is as like politically savvy as Bernie Sanders, while simultaneously being able to, like, you know, lie to people in the right way.
Yeah.
I think that we kind of, if they had, you know, someone who wasn't at end of life, who was like that, they'd probably win. Anyway, I don't want to make political predictions, but
yeah, neither do I. It's about to get bad. Anyway, Stackers, this is all for you. This is Cars Alpha right now. Somebody make bets on Predex. Anyways. Let's go back. We're going to go to number, where is it at? Number three, Node Wars. Bitcoiners fighting with each other is good for Bitcoin. It's from Scoresby, 20 comments, 12,000 sats, June 24th, Bitcoin territory. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so this is like sort of later stages of the op return debate. And this is like the manifestation of kind of the diplomatic unrest that happened around the relaxing of the op return relay policy limits. And so what people have begun to do is run in light of the op return limit debate, which is where Core decided to relax the op return limit, or there was a PR where there was an op return limit, and then Core eventually decided to relax the op return limit, and a lot of the community protested, and we had a lot of debate about it. That's mostly, debate is kind of finished because Core made a decision on it. But now we're seeing how people are reacting to it, and what we're seeing is people running alternative implementations of Core. And one of which is Knots, which has been memed pretty heavily, and there's been a lot of podcasts with people who are pro Knots. And then there's Libre Relay, which has even more relaxed mempool policy or standardness rules than even Bitcoin Core has. And Libre Relay is a fork of Bitcoin Core, like Bitcoin Knots is a fork of Bitcoin Core. But it tries to make all of its standardness rules match to the extent that it can, and still run without being DOSed, match consensus rules. And so it's very liberal. Like, it has no op return limits at all. It supports replace by fee for even, I think, transactions that haven't signaled it. I think more recently it supports transactions with a lower fee rate than one sat per V byte. Anyway, so it has very relaxed rules. And then, Knots proponents, Chris Guida, perhaps one of the most vocal and active Knots proponents, he implemented, something he called Garbage Man that pretends to be a Libre Relay node, but is not a Libre Relay node, and effectively Sybil attacks these Libre Relay nodes. And so they're kind of at war, kind of like a soft, kind of a software, literally a soft war on relay policy. And there's been a lot of interesting debate about how you attack one or the other, how you defend those attacks. And Scoresby does a great job of kind of summarizing everything that's happening, kind of like a war correspondent, sort of, taking information from the front lines and bringing it to us, and talks about what's going on. Anyway, that's more or less the summary of this post. And it's kind of the reason why the op return stuff ended up where it was is because, at least for some people, there's kind of no end to trying to the extent to which you'll have to mess with relay policy to defend against certain kinds of spam, or what Knots folks would call spam. And similarly, with this Libre Relay Knots battle, it's really hard to tell which node is bad or good when you connect to them, because there's no exact way to figure it out, because things aren't so binary, and even if they were, they a peer that you connect to can lie to you about whether they're black or white, good or bad. And so that's kind of, it's interesting that it kind of, that property keeps emerging in Bitcoin's peer-to-peer network, that just things aren't clearly good or bad. and you can't easily detect whether something is good or bad. And that's kind of, you know, why this might never end. We might be doing this kind of thing forever.
So I'm on Chris's GitHub right now, and I'm on the Bitcoin Knots GitHub. I don't know if you're on there because you can't see my screen, but he has on there, it says Bitcoin Knots connects to Bitcoin peer-to-peer network to download, fully validate Bitcoin blocks and transactions. Where is it at right here? I just saw it. Did I lose it? Where did I see it? I just saw something that looked...
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm trying to find... There was something I just saw right now when you were talking. I was going to ask you a question about it, but... Okay, this it goes. So it has a thing that says testing. It said testing and code review is the bottleneck for development. We get more pull requests than we can review and test on short notice. Please be patient and help out by testing other people's pull requests. And remember, this is a security critical project where any mistake might cost people lots of money. So in this situation, Keon, like if the average pleb, the average stacker is watching this, should we even bother running this? Or is this more for people that are like Chris to and like Super Testnet down in Mexico to be running this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I would say my recommendation, and you know, I'm sure Chris and people who are running Knots in the software systems would disagree. My recommendation would be to largely stay out of this stuff and until either Knots or Chris's project has as much critical review and reproducible builds to the same degree and kind of all the security and practices that Core does around the releases. I would recommend continuing to run Core. For advanced users who are capable of doing this review and are more confident in their ability to assess security on their own, you know, maybe you do want to play around a bit and assert your preferences and try to enter this war. But it's kind of, you don't want to show like it's you know the cliche of like showing up to a gunfight with a knife. This is a fundamentally like a software level and not just, you know, script kiddie stuff. This is like protocol level stuff, but not just protocol stuff. It's like incentivized protocol stuff. So very high degree of sophistication and complexity required to understand and assess the security of these things and whether they're good or bad. And so if you're not technical, I would forego getting involved at this stage and run Core. If you are technical, at least as technical as someone like I would say Chris, if you maybe can contribute to these projects, I think then you can begin to make that decision. But if you're a pleb, just run Core. You know, keep your Bitcoin safe. Don't worry about relay policy. This is like a very niche kind of issue that has been blown up into like a central.
Yeah, that's why I wanted. That's the point I want to get across to the stackers who are listening to this. I mean, you know, when I first came into Bitcoin, and you know, I hung out with a lot of developers, and it really took me a really long time to understand that a lot of developers. And, you know, bless their souls. I love them all. Some of my best friends in the world. But, you know, a lot of this stuff takes time to build, right? Like it takes years. And, you know, some of the things like really take time. And then, and not only does it take time, but like you need consensus. And then not only do you need consensus, but you need like a whole community effort behind it too as well. And then that takes time. And then just seeing how long it took just for like, I remember when Dusty used to come around talking about, what was that called?
Splicing.
splicing. I remember I'd be like, really? We're going to be able to do this, this. And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, oh, that's so cool. And then like, and nothing happened. And then like a year later, it's like, how's splicing going? Oh, it's amazing. And nothing happened. And then all of a sudden it just happened like overnight. And then before you know it, like it was everywhere. And now we just like take it for granted. So it just realized like a lot of this stuff just takes time. Like it really does. And it takes like a whole group of people to make it happen. And it needs like multiple iterations of it and like multiple groups of people to make it happen. But it starts with like one person. So that would be my advice, Stackers. Just like, definitely cheer them on. Cheer them on if they're your friends. Like Chris is a great guy. I love Chris. He's one of my favorite developers. He's a good friend of mine. And every time I see him, I give him a big old hug. But yeah, cheer him on. But it's just it's an uphill battle for sure.
Yeah, I think it's just it's a niche. This is like kind of a niche technical thing that we're all kind of talking about because we have nothing better to talk about.
Yeah,
for those of us who don't want to talk about Bitcoin treasury companies, yeah, this is kind of sure. what we're left with is what we got.
Yeah,
this is what we're talking about.
Yeah,
but sure. It's not something. It's not something you shouldn't be playing with fire.
Whatever,
if you don't really understand it.
Whatever happened to, weren't they going to get the Voskul? Were they going to get Voskul to do, how do you pronounce his name? Voskul? Is it Voskul?
Yeah, Voskul, I think. Voskul.
Weren't they going to get him to help Core or something? Did that ever come to fruition?
I don't think he wants to help Core. He has his own library that he's creating. I think he's built a node on it, but it's you know, basically the Bitcoin protocol as a library that you can use in other Bitcoin implementations. I think the, you know, Voskul's point is that Bitcoin's protocol is, you know, should be kind of this independent thing. The consensus rules should be their own thing. And then you should be able to, on top of that, create whatever other types of software that you want independently, so that Bitcoin Core and Knots will never have an accidental chain split. And they can both use something like Voskul's library in them and always know that they'll be the same, representing the same, because Bitcoin is just these consensus rules. They'll both be Bitcoin. Even if they have different opinions about things like standardness rules and relay policy. So that's kind of Voskul's idea. He also has a lot of other interesting ideas, and he's been working on it basically for 10 years now, like how to make it so you can sync, do a full block download and verification, you know, in a short time span, a couple hours, I think is his goal. So that's kind of what he's working on. I don't think he's going to help Core. I know Core is talking to him a lot and seeing if there's anything that maybe he's figured out that they haven't been paying enough attention to. But I don't, and I think he would help out Core to the extent that he can, as far as information sharing. But I don't suspect he'll be contributing to Core, given that this seems to be his life mission is figuring out this lib Bitcoin thing.
Yeah. Cool. We're going to jump into the next. Yeah, the number two top story is thou mayest privatize Bitcoin Core. This is from Scoresby, 19 comments, 13,000 sats, 9 hours ago, Bitcoin territory. What is this, Kian? This another Core?
Yeah, so post? Another what?
Oh, Core post?
Another what post?
Bitcoin Core node post, I guess.
Yeah, I think this relates. Yeah, this relates back to I guess what we were just talking about a little bit, at least. It's more like, you know, sort of echoes of the off return debate. But Kanzer, known as Kanzer, on Twitter and on Stacker News, at least his pseudonym, that a person likes, human like pseudonym that he uses is Brian Bishop. Been in Bitcoin a really long time. At one point was a co-founder of the bank in North Dakota, an awesome bank. I forget. Custodia. Was a co-founder of Custodia, did a lot of work with Vaults, and Vaults, like without opcode without new opcodes. Anyway, they wrote something on the Bitcoin Core mailing list, arguing that Bitcoin Core might want to be privatized. And I remember coming across this post and finding it really interesting, and it's at least great food for thought. But basically, what he argues is that Bitcoin, like the development of Bitcoin Core, it might be better if it's not so public and doesn't give people many rights as far as commenting, and doesn't give them a right to consume precious resources of Bitcoin Core maintainers. And in order to defend Bitcoin Core maintainers' time and everything and energies and things like that, might it be best if Bitcoin Core is, he uses the word privatized, I think, to get people's attention, but Bitcoin Core repo private, do a lot of this, the discussion about features and changes and things, to a large extent in private, and then everything will be public. The code will be public still. It'll still be open source. To the extent that they want private conversations revealed and have public comment on them, they will make them so. But they won't have to have an issue like the off return debate happen as a result of a pull request. Have the whole community spiral and spend months into the kind of debate and stuff that we had. That's like the general gist of his post. And he gives a bunch of good reasons for it. And, you know, there's also some evidence, or there's, you know, also already there are venues for Bitcoin Core contributors and people who contribute in any capacity, not just maintainers. They will have private conversations about features and things that aren't public already. And so he's like, well, he's basically saying, why don't we do more of that? And then so Scoresby took that post and then also as a result explored what open source means, because in some sense this is what Brian Bishop Kanzer proposing is that no longer open source. And I think Brian would argue that it is still open source. It's just the development is private. And I think that's what Scoresby came to a conclusion of themselves upon exploring it, is that open source does not really mean much more than the source is open. And the source is the source code of the programs are free for you to do what you want with them and free for you to view them. And so that, to a large extent, that's what Scoresby says here. And then he ties it into East of Eden, which I think I read it for the first time last year. But it is.
Do. Let me see there. Can you hear me? Oh, there you go. We're still live.
Okay. I don't know where I got lost.
It's all good.
Plugged in here. But,
no, I think just the deep state, you know, taking us down. You're getting. It's been a spicy episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Literally literally like I was on the main Wi-Fi and then like I got kicked off the main Wi-Fi and then it threw me to our backup Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know where I ended, where I was. No,
you were getting to the point about the, you were getting to the point about privatizing, privatizing Bitcoin Core and how it's justified. Are you there?
Oh. Yep. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's kind of the whole thing about the whole post. So it's hard to tell where I was, but I guess I'll just retell starting roughly 25% ahead. Anyway, so Kanzer makes this argument about privatizing Bitcoin Core. And it causes Scoresby, who wrote this post, to question whether that would be a violation of what it means for Bitcoin Core to be open source. Like, can something be open source and still be private the way Brian Bishop or Kanzer describes? And Scoresby comes to the conclusion that, yeah, because being open source doesn't really give you any special rights to like the maintainer's time or to be part of any kinds of discussions or to even contribute to the project. All that open source means is that the source, free and open source means is that the source is available and that you can modify it and do what you want with it. You can, and that's basically it. And so Brian Bishop's post, although it offended many people, it didn't, and I think will not be pursued, is consistent with open source at the very least. And so Scoresby has that realization and then compares it to the book, ties in the book East of Eden, that towards the end discusses Genesis in the Bible and the term thou shalt, which is pretty awesome. I read East of Eden last year. And that phrase has been perhaps mistranslated as kind of what the conclusion of the characters in the book is. And thou shalt implies that you should do something or it will happen. And the book concludes instead that thou shalt has been mistranslated from thou mayest. And thou mayest means that you have choice, you have free will. You get to choose whether you are, say, absolved of sin. And so that's how Scoresby ties it into this really, you know, I think one of Steinbeck's best works of fiction. That's kind of what that, even though Bitcoin Core would be privatized,
yeah,
you still have freedom, with the source code, but you have no special right. You don't have a special right to be absolved of sin. You can, if you choose to fork Bitcoin's code, read it, modify it. Anyway, we're tying three things together here. But I thought it was a pretty cool post, especially for anyone who's read East of Eden. If you haven't read East of Eden, I highly recommend it. It's probably one of the most beautiful books I've ever read. Just like absolute poetry and just lots of wisdom. Anyway.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on it? What's your thoughts on this? Do you have any thoughts on it? What do the Snackers say too?
I don't really know everything that Snackers said, but my thoughts on it are that it's worth talking about these things if it helps people come to the realization that Scoresby did and helps us understand the nature of open source, even because we all think of Bitcoin might be different than other things. Maybe the same rules don't apply. So I tend to agree with Scoresby that it won't happen, but it's worth talking about nearly anything that might improve Bitcoin.
Oh, so it hasn't happened yet, or they already decided? It feels like they decided, basically.
No, it didn't. They didn't. It's still public. It's not a private. It's not a private repo. It's not privatized.
I think it would be.
It's still public.
I think it would be a sad day if that did happen. Personally,
yeah.
I think it would be a very sad day. I would just pour out a beer, be crying like Michael Jordan if that were to happen. It's it would be very sad. It would just.
Yeah, I think it would be the end of the world. It would just be sad. I think that's kind of the point that Scoresby is making, is that at the end of the world is when we don't have access to Bitcoin's software anymore at all. And it's or how it becomes closed source or something.
Yeah, it's kind of how I feel about Jack Mahler's. It's like that. The same thing. Just kind of sad. Yeah. Dang. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But it I wouldn't be. I honestly wouldn't be shocked just the way the timeline's going. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd I say? ETF, man. Anyways, let's go to the number one story. Hopefully that never happens. I'll start praying for it. That never happens. The number one story of the week is, why are Bitcoiners idiots? This is from Den, June 26, SN territory. 88 comments, 11,100 sats. Keon, I think I stay away from this post. I personally don't think Bitcoiners are idiots, but I think maybe you do.
Not especially. I mean, I come down where most commenters came down in this thread, and it's like, you know, everyone at least displays idiot-like behavior. And we might see more of it among Bitcoiners because we pay a lot of attention to them. And, you know, a lot of Bitcoiners might be thrust into a spotlight where they can reveal their idiocy more so than normal people. But I don't think they're especially stupid. I think Shinobi talks about this a lot. And I think he believes it's true. But I'm not even sure if he's just trolling. He also tends, I think, to say things that he feels and not really interested in whether they're exactly true, because he's mostly interested in how people react to it. But, I don't think, Bitcoiners are idiots, but, Den's point in this, or Den's example of idiocy, is this podcast with Preston Fish, with the guest is Seb Bunny, who talks about a book that Den has actually read, and, you know, gets appears to not have actually read the book, and so Den gets kind of upset.
Well, did he actually listen to the Audible though? Because
yes, well, that'd be it might be a sign that he only listened to the Audible, that he didn't fully, internalize the content. But yeah, that's basically his thing. Is like, I think Den is kind of frustrated. He sees a lot of Bitcoiners who he you know agrees with, have so much in common with, but then he sees them kind of step out of their lane and just say something that is,
that's my middle
untrue
name,
with high confidence. And you know, it's idiot like behavior. And is that more? He's asking the question: is it, you know, in midst of his frustration, he's asking the question whether it's more common among Bitcoiners than
100%
the rest of the population.
I think it's more common amongst Bitcoiners. Yeah.
Well, I don't really know. I'm too in it. I see it, but I do see it quite frequently. And I think, you know,
but that
I think
doesn't make him an idiot, though. I don't think that makes him an idiot.
I don't think
right?
so. No, it makes him foolhardy. I think it makes him. I mean, we're probably both guilty of this too.
Yeah, 100%.
So I don't want to be too hard on people who have this problem. But I think I keep going back to the thing Jimmy Song said that I really liked on like why did
he comment here too?
He commented in here, but I was still so struck by an insight that he had that was just so simple and just rang so true for me. I think it was a post from maybe 6 months to a year ago that we also covered on the podcast. Or I think someone asked like, is there some spiritual quality to Bitcoin? It seems like lots of Bitcoiners have like spiritual awakening around Bitcoin. And Jimmy's like, it's, you know, it's pretty simple, is effectively what he said. It's just that these people became wealthy.
Good point.
And had a huge, huge, you know, change in their state of mind and the way they thought about the world when they didn't have to, you know, scrape and race in the rat race.
Totally.
Just to be able to think about their future. Like they're finally able to think about their future clearly.
Yeah.
And that has to feel, you know, profound. And I think that might be the case here. Similar kind of thing, you know, but maybe not working for good for people, as they have this huge come up. And I think for some people who you know, have an ego that's a little less restrained, it kind of shows up as them believing they figured out more than they have. And I think that's most of what I think is going on. I think I commented to that effect is that like getting rich. I said getting rich quick is a hell of a drug.
So I guess this guy got rich quick. I guess right here, is that what's going on?
Oh no, I didn't mean he actually got rich quick. I just meant most Bitcoiners, they got rich, you know, most like before something like Bitcoin and, you know, with absent, you know, putting a lot of effort into something, you know, founding a new product, whatever. We were talking about this actually earlier with Saylor and Mallers, but, you know, getting rich wasn't a matter of buying an asset and holding it for 4 years. It was a matter of
building something that, you know, people wanted to buy.
Yeah, yeah, building something valuable, which
was
really
Warren,
hard.
It was what Warren Buffett talks about. Yeah, it was what Warren Buffett talks about. It
takes way longer than 4 years.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
And actually, 4 years is a long time frame. Most people don't even have the like patience or attention span for 4 years. And so even waiting for 4 years shows a unique level of constraint that most idiots would lack. But that is pretty quick to get, you know, well, like, you know, generational wealth in 4 years, potentially, depending on how you played it. That is a really big deal. And I think it does get to some people's head.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I think the only thing I thought, when I put this comment underneath yours, I thought you meant he was the one that was rich. So that's why I thought he was on Preston's podcast. Oh. Yeah.
No, I didn't actually listen to the podcast, and I don't know the person in the podcast, and I'm basically taking Den's word for it.
Okay. Yeah, I really don't have any comments on this, to be honest. Like, I think just kind of what I've seen most of the time, whenever people that are unknown go on these bigger podcasts, it's usually because they're rich. And that's usually why they're on a podcast. Everybody's trying to get into a fund.
Well, you were on What Bitcoin Did. Does that make you rich? Huh? Oh.
I'm just kidding. No. That was like, hey, Carr, we need to help you. I think that's what that was.
I say, hey, poor, we have we're trying out socialism with our podcast.
No, I think that was more Peter trying to get the plebs behind him. I think that's what that. I think he started off the show saying that actually.
Cool.
Plus, his podcast doesn't have a fun attached to it, or didn't have a fun attached to it. That was the only difference. Preston has a fun attached to it. Marty's has its fun attached to it. All these other podcasts have funds attached to it. So that's what I thought you meant when you posted that at the bottom.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Anyways. Cool. I think that's all the top five stories that we covered. Let's jump into, we got no slam this week. Let's jump into my picks real quick. I wanted to do the Tesla's robot platform. Did you, so they rolled out the robo taxi last week in Austin. This guy, like, he ridden like five different robo taxis, and he was just kind of showing how it worked. And I watched most of this. I was just fascinated by it. Apparently there was one thing that happened, like it rode on the wrong side. That was the only mishap that happened last week in Austin, where like the whole robo taxi like went on the wrong side of the road briefly. So that was interesting. What was more fascinating is this, Keon. So like the whole LiDAR system that these Waymos use, apparently it's way more expensive. I had no idea that was a thing. And then, but the, what Elon's doing is using AI, you know,
vision.
Yeah,
cameras.
All that stuff, normal vision cameras. And so yeah. When you look at the, when you look at just like the cost of, just the cost and then the just how much over time that's going to go down and just how much over time the LiDAR system is going to go up, because we know that when it comes to that type of technology, yeah. Anyways, I actually think freaking Elon, I was wrong. I was 100% wrong on this. I actually thought the LiDAR system was, and I remember saying this, I don't think I said it on the pod, but I definitely said it in the lab. I actually thought the LiDAR system was actually going to make more sense. I was completely wrong about that. This actually, now I'm actually more bullish on the AI system. I mean, we'll see. It's still early. I was telling Topher, I was like, he has a robot taxi thing. Like, dude, your car can literally just make you money at this point. You could go to work and you can say buy car and then go make you money. It's insane, dude. And it's only going to go lower. It's insane. And the more you think about it, like all the cameras that we're going to have with these AR glasses, like those are literally robots waiting to be turned into, you know what I mean? Like they're going to start slapping cameras on robots. Next thing you know, they're Uber Eats people, just like they're just walking around downtown doing deliveries. Dude, we're almost there.
Yeah, you put some Google glasses on your dog and now it's like it's doing DoorDash.
We have robot dogs at this point. Like, dude, we're there at this point. I don't know. This like got my mind thinking. But yeah.
Yeah. Actually, Elon's been saying this for a while. He's been saying since Waymo first started experimenting with their LiDAR systems, which had to be like almost 10 years ago. But he's like, so human beings drive with just basically two cameras on their head.
And he said that? Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's basically what he said. He's like, so if we can make, you know, if we can make the AI like sufficiently smart, all it really should need is those, a Tesla has more than two cameras, but he's like, all it should really need is two cameras. And so he kind of thought about it first principles perspective like that. And he's like, LiDAR, you know, it seems great right now. And it is, you know, it does shine in certain situations where it does have an advantage over cameras, but if you just want drivers that are slightly more reliable than humans, or you know, significantly more reliable, I'm sure, than humans, all you need is a really well thinking, a nice brain, even if it's a digital AI one, and cameras that can see like humans' eyes, or better, and you don't need sophisticated, uncommon components to do it. And I thought it sounded very true to me. And it seemed like the slight advantage of LiDAR allowed Waymo to get ahead, but you know, kind of like the tortoise and the hare.
Right.
I think we're gonna see the robo-taxi thing just went out.
I think short term, I definitely feel safer in a Waymo for sure. But I think long term, I think you're right. I was shocked when I read this post, showed up in my inbox. I was just shocked. I was like, wow, somebody actually ran the numbers. Like, this was like an investor post, and I was like, wow, somebody ran the numbers and actually done that. And like, there's a whole other thing around this. It's like a whole graph and stuff. Yeah. I was just like, wow. Anyways.
Yeah. And Elon predicted the, you know, the unit economics of this, you know, back then. He's just like, it's going to be way cheaper. And unit economics matters a lot, especially for AI stuff that's gathering data. If you can make more of them, you can gather more data, which means your AI can get more intelligent, which means you're ahead. So it's like, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, dude, I just like, this just got me so much more bullish on hardware. I think we're just going to see a hardware boom, dude. I think we're about to see a hardware boom. I think we are.
I think we're at the beginning stages of it, but yeah, I'm already seeing signs of it.
Yeah.
Personally. Yeah, with Pebble coming back, they quit because it was too hard before. It must mean it's gotten easier.
The next thing I wanted to bring up was the early days episode I had with Lakos, a portal. He's doing hardware in Bitcoin. We had a really good conversation with him. We talked about portal and about what he's building there. Really interesting guy. We talked about
so he's NFC. Not doing the hardware wallet anymore?
No, he is. He's just integrating a little bit more different features to it. And he has a really interesting spec around DIDs and Noster and stuff like that. Dude, he's like us, dude. Like, the guy thinks deep about things, and he's very creative. And the way he come, like, I asked him the same type of questions I would ask people that come to FlubFab. Like, where do you come up with these? Like, where do you come up with these ideas? Why do you think like this? Like what makes you, like, you know, like, trying to find out what makes him go. And he's very curious guy. Very curious guy.
Yeah, he's also very into co-working. I know you guys talked about that when he visited FlubLab.
Oh, yeah, I was asking him that too. Yeah, we were talking about that too.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we were talking about Portal and all that stuff. But definitely check it out, Stackers. I think it's one of my favorite episodes that I've recorded so far, just because he's a good friend of the lab, and I love talking to him. Super bullish on Portal, though. Super bullish. And then
Have you seen the actual device? It's actually really, it's aesthetically very well done, and I think pretty cool. It has the shape of it as a key.
Yeah,
which kind of is a nice kind of reminder of what it's for. There's a lot of cool things about what they've done.
Yeah, we're gonna Nick has one already that we've been playing with, or he's been playing with, and then we just ordered another one. So I'll probably do a workshop on that one. Plus, he's already shown us the last year when we had him. He did a workshop at PlubLab that we have up on PlubTV. But super bullish on it. The other one I wanted to share was the curated realities. So this was an AI film festival that got released. Some really great articles. Also, I should mention, I forget who opened up the new AI territory. They resurrected it. Do you know who
Optimism.
That was? Yeah, Optimism. Optimism. Did. So badly needed. But so this one got released. This thing here won the AI Film Festival. I watched this thing like 15 times. It's so good, dude. It's so good. It was like, it reminded me the first time I saw Primal. I don't know if you ever, or not Primal, Primer. Primer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever
saw Primer. I remember Primer.
It reminded me of that, where I just watched it like 15 times and like had to understand it. And like, it just led to so many different like firings in my head. But it's called Total Pixel Space. It's almost like a meta commentary on AI film and like where it's headed. Mm-hmm. And I would like to hear, dude, you should watch it so we can talk about this at some point, because it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on it. I have my thoughts on it, but I would like to hear your thoughts on it, because it's
okay.
I guess you can read it if you want to read my thoughts, but it's fascinating. I emailed the guy almost immediately. This is where I wish I had like a thriller podcast again, where I could go interview these guys just to pick their brain. But I emailed him immediately and I was like, yo, dude, I just saw your thing. I'm fascinated by it. Keep up the great work. Let me know if there's anything I could do. Just because he's a professor at Arizona.
So. Okay. Is this, I think I missed the title of this post and I can't see your screen. It's The Life of Chuck.
No, it's called Curated Realities by 0x Bitcoiner. Okay. was a snacker.
Oh, Curated Realities. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet. All right. Yeah. I'll check it out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. I don't know how. I mean, it's. I don't know how. At some point, I will reach out to him again, and like, I'll keep pen palling him. It's good to have pen pals. Have you
made anything AI video? Oh,
have I?
Sorry.
No.
Yeah.
I don't have the time to. Trust me, I would. If I wasn't doing Plub Lab full time, I would be all in on this. All in. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Cool. The other thing just want to bring this up. This was another Den post. Who are the world's best investors? And just so you know, this is a very clickbaity article, and turns out the best investors are corporations. So keep investing in them.
That's all.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it just kind of just goes to show that, you know, all the places that we were complaining about earlier are the best places to invest in. And it also just goes to show, too, we're just like in a super bubble right now, or about to be a bubble. We're in the beginnings of a bubble. That's what I believe. We're also seeing, too, like, and they were talking about this on Stacker Sports last week. Like, Lakers just sold their team. Dallas Mavericks just sold their team. There's a lot of sports selling going on, sports team selling. There's expansion happening. There's casinos that are going to be built next to these teams. There's a lot of people selling off right now. You know, it's funny because Undisciplined was like, well, is this a thing happening before like a great, you know, like a, is there some sort of like a reason for this, right? Like, it's my type of thinking too, where I would be like, oh, there's probably some like weird reason for this. And Grey Ruby very much so like, no, this is just, you know, they've owned it for 20, 30 years. We're coming up on another cycle here in the, you know, in the 2000s. Like, this is normal. They're going to keep 15% of, you know, and this is just how cycles work in centuries or whatever. And I'm probably, Grey Ruby, sorry for ruining your, how you expressed it. But he was saying just something, it's just a very practical way of, getting a return on your original investment, even if you bought it 30, 40 years ago. Because I think the Lakers sold for like $10 billion or something. But it just goes back to like, who are the world's best investors? Mm-hmm. And it turns out it's the long-term holders. But yeah, let's get post. You got any thoughts on that?
Okay. I don't have any thoughts.
Somebody on here put, the world's top investors are on Stacker News. Few.
So. Oh, there you go. Bitcoiners. Bang, bang.
And then the other one was, we're going to jump into yours, which is, you had notes on DOS due to invoice to send sats.
Yeah. Crap, I didn't pull that up. But, yeah, I think it's 0x1BTC. Yep. They created another post. They're doing these awesome posts. They spend a lot of time monitoring Bitcoin's peer-to-peer network and Bitcoin miners for block templates and stuff. I guess there was what appeared initially to be perhaps an anomaly that they had a hard time diagnosing, but there was like very high CPU usage on Bitcoin core nodes for a period of time. And I guess this had also happened on in Bitcoin's debug builds. And so a lot of people thought it was just associated with the debug builds, because, you know, the people who monitor this stuff are usually running these debug builds, which is, you know, something a developer runs to see more of what's going on inside a program. So they thought maybe the CPU spike was not happening for many people on the network. But it turns out that there, as the result of like some kind of like rune minting thing that was happening. It caused some of the peer-to-peer system on Bitcoin nodes, the things that share transactions with other Bitcoin nodes. It had a small error, or not really an error, but an inefficiency in the way that it would process a lot of messages when they were received. And it caused the CPU spike, which caused a lot of nodes to kind of disappear from the network temporarily. Like they effectively got DOSed, denial of service. And so it just kind of disrupted the network in some, like, a, you know, sort of a subtle way, not, you know, not that significant. And I don't think many people even noticed that it happened. But it did have an effect and was eventually patched. And I just thought it was a very nice post, kind of detailing what happened and describing also how some of the people who we assume are like chain analysis companies monitoring like where Bitcoin transactions, trying to figure out what IP addresses perhaps Bitcoin transactions originate from. They actually made the specific problem worse. Is one of the things that they allude to in the post. Anyway, I really love his articles, and I hope he keeps, I don't even know if it's a dude, but I hope they keep doing them because they're like awesome. Like I didn't even notice that this happened until this post was written, and then I also didn't have to go looking for why it happened because they wrote about it. So
that's wild.
Yeah.
The next post you had was technological lag, personal account.
Oh, yeah. So Simple Stacker, I think they mentioned in this post, I'm reviewing this mostly from memory, but I think they mentioned in this post that their wife went out of town, and their wife is very fond of keeping all mail that they receive. And so Simple Stacker was maybe perhaps procrastinating some of the research and decided to sort through the mail. In sorting through the mail, it occurred to them that they should probably go paperless with more of it. And he used that experience to discuss technological bottlenecks and you know, because the context being that paperless, a lot of these companies would have allowed them to go paperless 20 or so years ago, and they haven't got around to it. And so, he's using it to discuss show how slow, even for someone like him, who's like technically sophisticated and has the time and understands the trade-offs, it took him 20 years to adopt a technology that would have made his life better. And it's an interesting fact of humans that we kind of are slow on the uptake. And so even if technology improves, and even if it improves, especially if it improves really fast, we are likely not, it's not going to diffuse very quickly or as quickly as it emerges. And I thought in general, it's just a really interesting fact and kind of cool.
Yeah. Cool. Got the last one here is, no, that's all of it. And then the other one is Pleb Poet SN Zine. We have Pleb Poet right here. Do you want to talk about your zine real quick? Okay. Here. Yeah, you can come here if you want to. Keon can't hear you, but if you want to talk about your zine.
Hey, Keon, you're just the best, and I just miss you and can't wait till you come back. And it's good to see you on the screen. And I made a zine, and this is what it looks like. I really liked it. The theme was grassroots, which just seemed to really work out with a lot of the content that came up this week, naturally. And I love that synergy and serendipity of it all. And basically, yeah, check it out. You can read it. You can buy it. Same type of deal. You guys know the drill. But I do... you know, still want to hear any feedback or ideas about anything that should be going in there that I'm missing, or, you know, any thoughts. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, when I saw it this morning, I was like, wow, this feels like you're like an actual poet.
Oh, yeah, like the fingerprints are on it. Carr says my fingerprints are on it. But that's basically all I have to say. Pass it back.
What did you think, Kian, when you saw it?
Oh, I thought it was cool. It seemed to have more color than usual and more green. I like the color green.
Yeah.
I feel calm, which is rare. But yeah, in general, I liked it. I haven't gone through it all yet. But I like them all. Pleb Poet doesn't disappoint. So.
Yeah, for sure. I saw it this morning. And I was like, yeah, this feels like her style all over it. And then when I saw like this stuff here on the side, the way she did the Bitcoin in San Diego, I was like, oh, that's amazing, dude. Makes me want to visit that.
Oh, right. Yeah, post. I remember that post.
Yeah. It's very creative. It's just a very creative way to present Snacker News in a different way. I mean, not to say that your site is bland, but it's a different spin. Let me say it this way. It's a reinterpretation of Snacker News that I think kind of shows that like, this is what artists do, right? Like when somebody says, hey, I'm going to go create Dune, right? And they're like, cool, I'm going to take your book and I'm going to go make it into a feature film. This is like that version of that. But this is like what you do when you give artists, people that are talented to go and create that. This is what you get when you give them autonomy to do that. This is why I'm a big believer in giving people autonomy to create whatever they want. It's because you get stuff like this. And this is cool. Really cool. Yeah, I like it. Not funded by my Bitcoin also. I didn't see that on Meme Monday. Really cool stuff. Anyways. Get it. It's hot. It's released. When are you doing the book?
Resupplies.
Okay. Next month, she says. Next month till the book comes. Yeah. I think that'll be cool.
Cool.
Really cool. Okay, cool. I think that's everything. I think the last thing that we got is the fountain boost from last week. We got Blockchain Boog says, Zap, the rant is something to think about. Thanks, Boog. And then Great Ruby said, Zap. There you go. Keon, what are you doing this weekend?
We didn't do Top Cowboys.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I don't know if you intentionally
skipped it. So also, I should mention we're gonna go. We're doing two parties this week. I won't say who they are. And then we also have somebody else that we're gonna go to something here at 6. So we have a lot of stuff going on tonight,
which is very soon. Okay. Well, why don't we skip Top Cowboys?
No, we can't. We can't skip Top Cowboys. We can't skip. The Stackers will be very upset. All right, Cowboys, let's do it.
Okay.
Top Cowboys, here we go. We got Coob, Stacker in hiding, Undisciplined. Undisciplined's going higher and higher every week. I feel like he's going higher and higher.
I believe it's the same.
It is. So 117 is 633 days. Undisciplined is 640. Blockchain Book 619. Gray Ruby. Yeah.
I don't know if there was anyone who was higher up because maybe still stacking after all these years lost theirs.
Crypto or Cryoto Sensei. Jason B. Neil Muffrey TX. Look at me, Carr. Spending a lot of time on Stacker News late at night. Pleb Poet 33. Stack Harder, Real Bitcoin Doggy. Real Bitcoin Doggy. Unschooled. Elvis Mercury. Team Plube. I think. Jimmy Song, 51. Ben the Carmen came back. Boom. For a day. Yeah, pretty good. We even got Bugle back. Look, Bugle make a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's all. Yeah. Can't wait this weekend.
What am I doing? I think I'm hanging out and trying to figure out what I'm gonna wear to a funeral.
Oh no.
I haven't bought anything yet. But I'm gonna do that. That's most of the, work stuff, but that's most of my plans. How about you, Claire? What are you doing this weekend?
We're gonna go party tonight. Party some more. Gotta come back tomorrow. We're doing a workshop, BitX workshop. Or Soul Satoshi BitX workshop. And then I gotta do some more work on Sunday. Go to church, praise the Lord, and come back on Monday and do it all over again. So next week's gonna be short because we got July 4th, right? On Friday.
Oh, I didn't even think of that, but yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'll probably go watch the fireworks next week and stuff. Yeah, I don't know how we're gonna do Snacker News next week. We'll figure it out.
Oh, we can have a special one. Or at the fireworks in the background. I don't know.
Really. I was thinking about taking Friday off, to be honest. I was thinking about taking Friday off.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we can do Thursday night.
I was thinking about taking Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off, actually. But we'll see. I mean, we'll figure it out. Maybe we'll do maybe we'll do Stacker News Live early Friday or something. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. Convenient that Oliver is leaving before we celebrate our independence from his ancestors.
Yeah,
you should talk about that when you at your
yeah
dinner for him.
Well, we'll drink one for you tonight, Keon.
Okay, thanks, I appreciate it.
All right, Snackers, have a great weekend.
Yeah.